Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording of the reading and two homilies from our December 20th, 11 a.m. service. The first homily is What Sparks Your Joy by Victoria Poling. The second homily is The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up by Reverend Bodie. Thanks for listening.
So I'm going to read a reading now that recognizes the winter solstice that takes place tomorrow. And of course, we know that the root of Christmas and all of these celebrations and festivities at this time of the year are related to the rhythms of nature, to the time of the shortest days and the longest nights, and now, beginning tomorrow, the return of the sun. Winter solstice, of course, has been celebrated in cultures the world over for thousands of years. This celebration of light and the rebirth of the sun in old Europe was known as Yule, from thought to come from the Norse language, J-U-L, Yule. So the wheel is turning, the sun is coming back. Listen to this poem of celebration at the turning of the wheel. It's a poem by Susan Cooper titled The Shortest Day. So the shortest day came and the year died, and everywhere down the centuries of the snow-white world came people singing, dancing to drive the dark away. They lighted candles in the winter trees. They hung their homes with evergreen. They burned beseeching fires all night long to keep the year alive. And when the new year's sunshine blazed awake, they shouted, reveling. Through all the frosty ages, you can hear them echoing behind us. Listen. All the long echoes sing the same delight this shortest day as promise wakens in the sleepy land. They carol, feast, give thanks, and dearly love their friends and hope for peace. And so do we, here, now, this year, and every year. Welcome, Yule.
I feel so grateful right now for this choir, for that joy, and thank you, Paul. Thank you, Ikui. I'm also incredibly grateful to be here with you this morning to share my own spark of joy because, you know, it's not always that way. I don't always feel this much joy and this much pleasure, and I'm not always surrounded by a beautiful choir singing music to me every morning. I wish. Even right now, I'm still feeling some of the sorrow that was brought up today in the joys and sorrow. And when I feel that way, sometimes I get a little possessive about my joy. I want to take that joy and put it in a bowl and hold it really tightly, and I don't want to let go. And look at me now, I'm like the miserly Scrooge. How can I possibly feel my joy when I'm holding on so tightly? I don't know. So today, I want to share with you a very powerful teaching that I discovered this fall, because this year wasn't a very joyful year for me. I was struggling with some health challenges, and it was just confusing. I didn't know what was happening in my body. I didn't understand. I sought a lot of advice, and the way that it goes with advice, you know, you get a lot of conflicting advice once you start asking people for help. I was trying to be nice this whole time also, like, oh, thank you for that advice, I appreciate that, and thank you for that other advice that is exactly the opposite of what I just heard, but thank you, and I'm trying to be grateful, and it just got so tiring, and I got worn out, and I didn't want to be nice anymore, and I didn't want to be polite, and I didn't want to talk to anybody, and it got hard to get out of bed in the morning. I didn't want to go face the day, I didn't want to go to work. I didn't feel like I had anything left to give. It was so exhausting. I needed some real help. Where was I going to find that? Well, I was muddling along like this for days, weeks, months, actually. One day I was at work. I was sitting in my office, and a dear colleague of mine, who you all know well, Joseph Bednarik, who works with me at Copper Canyon Press, stopped by my door, and he said, "Hey, have you heard about this book? It's called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up." Life-changing magic. Well, that sounded pretty good. I could use some life-changing magic, but tidying up? You mean like cleaning my house? Really? Okay, I was intrigued, but a little skeptical. So I went home and I was talking with my housemate, and she works at William James. She has access to many, many books, and of all the books she could have picked up that day, she said, "Oh, I just got a copy of The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Do you want to borrow it?" Yes, yes, I would like to borrow it. So I opened up this book by Japanese organizing consultant Marie Kondo, and there on page 3, she writes, "A dramatic reorganization of the home causes a correspondingly dramatic change in lifestyle and perspective. It is life transforming." Well, in my gut, I just felt this is true. I believe this. This is going to work. And in my heart, I thought, yes, I want to clean my house. This sounds great. I don't want to do anything else. I just want to clean my house. And my head said, well, I mean, I guess there's nothing to lose. You could use a dramatic change in your perspective and health. So, you know, let's give it a shot. Skeptical. So the magic of this process is that it relies on asking one very simple question. And it's not about what to do with things, and it's not, if I'm going to use this again someday, where should I put it? It's not about that. It's about using the senses. It's about using your intuition. It's about asking, when you pick up an object, does this spark joy? Does this spark joy? Well, I felt a lot of relief when I first read that question, does this spark joy? Because it gave me permission to just use my body, be in my own passions, to let them guide me, to make these decisions. And I've been holding on to a lot of past teachings that came from my younger days in academia, my being raised by two wonderful, talented, intelligent scientists, And so picking up this book and doing this process also felt a little bit illicit, like the great skeptic, the great academic critic in the sky was going to come down and say to me, "What? You're making decisions based on intuition and not data and facts? Cite your sources." Where's that empirical data that intuitive decision-making will actually bring you joy? So to appease the great skeptic in the sky, I've also brought a citation from someone who's credible to such academic skeptics, from a dead white European male who happens to be the tremendous poet John Keats, and this quote is in your order of service. John Keats says, "I am certain of nothing but of the holiness of the heart's affections and the truth of the imagination. What the imagination seizes as beauty must be truth." He goes on to say, "I am more zealous in this affair because I have never yet been able to perceive how anything can be known for truth by consecutive reasoning." So take that, great skeptic. Like learning anything, I soon discovered that intuitive decision-making takes practice, and practice comes through repetition. So what a joy it was when I got to take every single object in my house that I own and pick it up and hold it. Like the sweater, I picked it up and I felt it and it was warm and I put it on. It felt so good and I felt that life come back, that little spark. That leap, that delight of joy started to come into my body again. That deadness, the overwhelm, the exhaustion started to dissipate a little bit. I thought, ooh, this is it. This is powerful. And I just kept doing that over and over. Does this spark joy? Yes. Does this spark joy? No. Soon I was surrounded by a small collection of things that I found truly beautiful. This is my truth. This is what sparked joy. So now you might be asking yourselves, what about those things that don't spark joy? What do you do with those? That's great. So you're surrounded by the things to keep. I think I might have a few things to, you know, get rid of. What about that? Well, there were some things that were not hard to give away. And one of the places that I really enjoyed getting rid of things happens to be my file cabinet. Anyone here have a file cabinet at home? So in my file cabinet, there were bank statements and insurance explanations of benefits. And don't get me wrong, I'm grateful that I have a statement that tells me I have money in the bank and I have health insurance. Very grateful. But that piece of paper that tells me what I got charged, that doesn't bring me joy. So I cleared out my files. I took boxes and boxes of recycling out, and then I got rid of that big, heavy file cabinet. It was great. Maybe you have a file cabinet or cabinets you'd like to move along. So I started to gain some real confidence that I knew what sparked joy and what didn't. But then I got to the tough items, the sentimental items, the things that held a lot of emotion and memories that were important to me. What was I going to do with those? So this was the second great teaching from tidying up. And that is, Marie Kondo, I quote, "When you put your house in order, you put your affairs and your past in order too. As a result, you can see quite clearly what you need in life and what you don't, and what you should and shouldn't do." So, picking up some of these items that were really charged, I realized I have to release the joy that's in it. It was like this. All that joy was being held in that object, like in a filing cabinet. It was locked up. It could not fill me. It could not go out into you. It couldn't go anywhere. I was trapped in that object. I needed to give thanks, let go, release it, so that that object could move along out into the world and clear some space for my new joy. This is where I ran straight into denial. Denial that I have stuff. I don't have a lot of stuff. And I also ran into denial of where I am in my life right now. In my mind, I was still in my early 20s. I was having adventures. I didn't have so much gray hair. And I was sailing. I was a sailor on tall ships, teaching kids about the natural world, about the sacredness of this planet. And I was living out of a single sea bag, very minimalist. Well, the reality is that I've been in Port Townsend for 7 years. I have a house full of stuff. I wear reading glasses. I'm not in my 20s anymore. So there, hiding in my closet, was a stealth collection that was about to teach me a very important lesson. I had a stealth collection of coats and jackets, you know, like put on when you're cold and you wear that coat out in the world. I had over a dozen coats and I didn't wear them. What could they be for? So I pulled out the first lovely coat that is so gorgeous and I don't wear it. And I asked, does this spark joy? And no, well, maybe yes. I don't know, but I can't get rid of this right now. And then this kept happening. And I knew I needed to change my approach. It was a little bit bewildering. There's this pile on my floor, and I walked past it for several days. I just left it there. Like, I can't deal with this. Finally, I stopped walking past it. I stopped trying to figure out what to do. And I just sat down in front of those coats. And in that space, in that silence, and a solution came to me. I lined them up in a timeline, starting from the first one I'd received. And I picked them up one by one, and I just allowed myself to feel all of the feelings, all of the memories associated with that coat. There was the one from my mother that she gave me when I left home for the first time as an exchange student in high school. There was the coat given to me by a woman who took me under her wing when I was an undergrad living in China, researching and feeling very alone and very confused about what I was doing. There was a coat from one of my early employers, my boss, who had two sons, and she mentored me like a daughter. There was also a really burly Carhartt jacket that was tough that I got for myself when I was in college and I joined the logging sports team. Axe throwing, chainsaw, you get it, you get the picture. I needed to be tough. I'm going out into the world, I'm a small person. I gotta have my Carhartt jacket. So, what to do with those jackets? In that moment of feeling all of those feelings and reliving all of those memories, I suddenly realized that what my closet contained was a whole suite of coats of armor. I was holding on to them for protection because they had kept me safe when I was going out into the world as a young woman, having adventures, but also taking risks, exploring dangerous situations. And when I realized that, I had a moment where I felt, as poet Deborah Landau puts it in her poem, Minutes, Years. She says, "One summer, there was no girl left in me. It gradually became clear. It suddenly became." Thanking and letting go of my coats took on the weight of a ritual rite of passage, a putting away of the things of a young woman in order to live my place into the world as a maturing adult, to develop new ways of being and of giving my gifts. The Carhartt jacket, I gave that to another young woman, a poet, and a teacher. So this made space in my life for this thing called gratitude. And it also made space in my life for some recognition and understanding that the exhaustion, the overwhelm, the health challenges, the nebulous, hard-to-understand symptoms, that was all really a sign that pointed towards, here lies a path, towards changing your life. At that point, the sorting process picked up momentum, and it really did become clear to me what I need and what I don't need in my life. And I started to ask the question, does this spark joy about everything else in my life? The food I eat, do these beets and does this kale spark joy? Yes. Yes, it does. These are delicious. Do these gluten-y crackers spark joy? No, I get a little belly twist with that. No, I'm not eating those crackers. What about exercise? Does yoga spark joy? It doesn't spark my joy. But lifting weights sparks my joy. I'm going to go pick up heavy things and I'm going to put them back down. It's going to be great. My calendar, my commitments that I make, some of them didn't spark joy. Thank you, commitment. Thank you, responsibility. I let you go. Then something very, very beautiful happened, and this is where my perspective really changed, and this is where I deepened into this practice. One afternoon, I was cleaning out the kitchen with my housemate, and she handed me this bowl, and she said, "This doesn't spark my joy. Does it spark your joy?" And I took it, and I had this feeling that I was holding something sacred, a sacred symbol. And because I'd cleaned out the clutter, I now had a clear space, a table, on which to set the bowl in my bedroom. And I sat with this bowl, watching the empty space. And in the empty space, I discovered what I call empty bowl wisdom. The wisdom that arises from being clear, from emptying out, from letting go, from giving up, from saying, I just don't know. I don't know how to heal. I don't know how to follow this advice. I don't know how to change my life. I just don't know. I'm going to sit here with this bowl. Empty bowl wisdom. And in that space, that very powerful open space, when we ask a question like, where is my joy? What sparks joy? Does this spark joy? That question is a flame. That is a spark that clears out anything lingering, that opens up curiosity, inquiry, which opens up interest, which opens up the body, which leads to some feeling, which leads to some motion, to standing up, getting up off the floor, moving around, dancing. All of this was happening for me, and I discovered in that empty bowl, there's that spark. There's that spark of joy. If I just sit. The power of being still, the power of being silent, the power of breathing out. Breathing out. This was my life-changing magic. I arrived there. I became conscious that the body knows things. The body has intelligence. It's alive. It's living. It's breathing. What incredible joy. When I sit with my empty bowl, the spark returns, and I know that I can trust this. I can trust this intuition. I don't need academic approval for this process. I can rekindle my joy. In this way, my faith is confirmed, my hope is restored, and the love that I have to give is renewed so that I can give it to you. And so here's my final gift to you. Your body is like this empty bowl. And this empty bowl, when lit by a spark, becomes a chalice. You are your own chalice, and a spark of joy will light you up. I'd like to close with an Anna Sweer poem from her book, Talking to My Body. It's called There is a Light in Me. Whether in daytime or in nighttime, I always carry inside a light. In the middle of the noise and turmoil, I carry silence. Always, I carry light and silence.
I'm going to add just a little bit to what Victoria has introduced to us this morning, or at least what she has introduced to me, because this is a new practice for me, this method for getting a hold of your life and transforming it, because what you might think of as a simple technique for tidying up your house or organizing your possessions turns out to be a spiritual discipline of religious dimension that in a sly, crafty, underground way gets you to actually do what I've been preaching about in complex mythological imagery and highly nuanced psychological distinctions for years, namely to awaken to your life and what is around you. I say, sly, crafty, underground. For here's this little unpretentious appearing book. It's titled, as Victoria said, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. It's the kind of title that you would find in a magazine article of Redbook or Oprah or Better Homes and Gardens. This little book takes you in by prescribing in very simple words and very simple illustrations a very simple way of reducing the clutter of your physical processions in your life, and who wouldn't want to do that? But oh no, this little book, if followed, as Victoria is saying, will turn your life over. I've concluded after reading the book this week, I finished it yesterday, I've concluded that this is a tricky way of getting us Americans to practice religion. We Americans, with all our possessions and being overscheduled, overcommitted, overworked, this is a way for us to get us to pay attention and to wake up to life that is around us every day. So I say, buyer beware. This is a religious treaty in disguise. This little book is tricky in another way as well. The method prescribed, so very simple, is first to discard your possessions. And then after that, concern yourself with organizing them and storing them. You take it in that order and you don't mix the process. Enticingly, it says you can do this, you should do this in one fell swoop, all at once. Not piecemeal, or you'll never do it, but discard your possessions all at once. And that has an appeal to me. I could find the time to do that. Ah. The fine print, however, says that this fell swooping one-time discarding process typically takes about 6 months. And that's because, as Victoria has described, you have to take every blessed thing that you own, each piece of clothing, each cooking and eating utensil, each book, each folder of papers, you take each in hand, you hold it, you touch it in a quiet space with no distractions, and you ask of each thing, does this spark my joy? You start with the easier possessions to discard, like clothing. You gather all your clothes from every room, and you bring them into one place, and then you go through them piece by piece. And she suggests subcategories like tops, bottoms, jackets, socks, shoes, etc. But you connect with each piece, with each article of clothing, inquiring of it, does this article of clothing currently spark my joy? If it does, it remains with you. If not, out it goes. Typically, says the author, those who go through this practice, about two-thirds of their clothes are gone. So I can see my way through this part of this spiritual discipline of tidying up. But now, as Victoria says, we start moving toward the more difficult parts, like books and papers and photos and other personal mementos. And already I can feel the emotional pain of letting go. Am I, for example, to get rid of this childhood football helmet? I shouldn't, should I? No. It's followed me around. What do you say? Then I go, so that's one thing. Then I go to my home study, which has been closing in on me for years. I tell you, this is truly the case. Books and papers are now on the floor, encroaching, surrounding my office chair. Occasionally, I will try to stop the swelling tide, push the papers, stack the books, find new bookshelves. I've taken some to my office here. But, you know, how can I let go of these books? I might need them sometime in the future. I might actually read them sometime in the future. My thoughts and my feelings, my ideas are present in these. When I look at the books on my shelves, I remember that part of my life. And so how can I let that go? As I say, just thinking about it gives me great anticipatory pain. The author assures us that, quote, discarding these things that don't spark joy has no adverse effects whatsoever, and further, that this process of learning what does truly spark joy will transform your life. And I must say, I'm intrigued, I'm tempted, and I'm worried. So, Victoria, I asked you to join me on this fourth Sunday of Advent to speak about joy. Instead, what you have brought me what you have brought me is a whole new spiritual discipline and the possibility of a total life transformation and also the possibility of great existential angst. Fortunately, Victoria, I do have a way that you can redeem yourself. One of the things that always brings me unquestionable joy is to hear you play the violin. So if you would play a violin piece for me, all will be forgiven.